I mean, we used to go in at midday and then leave at about 5 or 6 in the morning, and then be back there for 12. And then when we said we can't stand any of this, and we got Pat Collier, you know, got the record company to get Pat Collier.
Yeah.
The first day we went in with Pat, the session started at about 11. We were finished at 7, and we were in the pub by 7:30. A couple of drinks, go home, and you come back the following day, and it was brilliant. And it was the first two tracks we did with him were Big Blue World and Gilded Cage, and it was just so easy, the whole thing.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard, today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by Your Future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Recording artists Fitzsimon and Brogan are currently number one on the Beat 100 charts with their song Big Blue World, and releasing their third album in just a few weeks. In this episode, we talk about the producer of the album, Pat Collier, no stranger to pop hits, with one of his productions, Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. Fitzsimon and Brogan's new song, This Girl, is played in its entirety for the first time for you, with love from singer B. Brogan and my friend, guitar man and songwriter Neil Fitzsimon, speaking from the Isle of Wight to me on Whidbey Island.
We're not in London anymore.
Oh, I didn't know.
No, we lived in London, but then we'd had enough of it, really. So we bought a house on the Isle of Wight, which is like a small island just off the south coast of England, in between England and France, I suppose. And we live there, which is, it's really nice.
The only thing I know about that island is in a song lyric.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm 64, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. With Vera, Chuck, and Dave, isn't it?
Yes. Everything I know about England better be in a song lyric, or I don't know anything.
For the Beatles, yeah, we could buy a cottage on the Isle of Wight if it's not too dear. Or we could rent a cottage, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, God, I never thought of that. Oh, God.
You hadn't?
No. We used to come down there on holiday, and we loved it, and we thought, wouldn't it be good to get away from London? Because, you know, I mean, I was born in London. Wasn't born in London, but we'd been there for quite a while, and it was just, you know, it is so hectic up there and everything, and there's a lot of crime in London, as you know, a lot of stabbings and everything. So we decided we'd wanted to get away, and down here the pace of life is just so slow. But I mean, it took a bit of getting used to that, the shops closing for lunch and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But it's quite good, actually. You've got people that came here for, like, the I'm sure of it, in certain places, that came here for the festivals in 69 and 70 and have never left.
You went to Woodstock and you never came back.
That's right.
Don't take the brown acid or whatever it was they say on the record. I was a little bit too young for it. I was probably 13, 14, something like that. And it was on the other side of the country, too, so.
Oh, yeah, did Hendrix play that one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Or was that Monterey did he do?
He played that one, too. Monterey was the one where he set his guitar on fire. Woodstock was Star Spangled Banner and just crazy stuff. And he was like the highest paid guy at Woodstock. He had just started
out. Oh, he's incredible, wasn't he?
Yeah,
was incredible.
He started in Seattle and went to London.
Yeah, it was it Chaz Chandler took him over, didn't he, from the Animals?
Exactly, the bass player, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big Hendrix. I just got, like, you know, other guitar players, you look at Hendrix and you just think, what the hell is he doing? It looks unbelievable, doesn't it?
Yeah, like he invented a whole new technique of just raping the guitar or something. I don't know what he's doing to it. But
no, he's great, yeah.
You sent a song, This Girl.
Oh, yeah,
I really like that song.
Yeah, it's going to be on the new album in the fall. It's, yeah, that's one of the tracks from that. It was actually also recorded for two, it was also recorded for Eurovision But my publisher at the time turned it down after I got to the semi-final with This Is Love, and he didn't think it was strong enough, and I was so incensed I asked to leave the publisher.
Oh, no.
And he got so annoyed me, accepted my offer. So I found myself without a publisher for a while, but I felt so strongly about it, so I just I'm not having this. But then it found its way into the musical of Jack Dagger, and I've actually got a cast recording of them doing that, and it became one of the main themes in the musical. Not with anything to do with me. It was just the musical director, and they worked on it and had it of one of the reoccurring theme through the whole musical. So yeah, so it was actually quite brilliant, because I went to the Royal Academy of Music to see them performing it, and it was the whole cast singing that chorus, which sounded amazing.
That must have been cool. You don't get that every day. How long ago you'd write that?
God, I suppose about 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, you could have told me you wrote it 2 weeks ago, and I would have said, oh, yeah, man, it sounds so fresh, you know?
No, about 5 or 6 years ago, yeah, we did that. And that was with Pat Collier as well.
Oh.
And I just wanted to write a song a bit like a Beatles, like 1963-64 type song.
Yeah, it's kind of a shuffle thing. How did you get the sounds at the end? They're sort of guitar chime sounds or something. I can't tell what you're doing.
Yeah, I can hardly remember going back that far now. I think Pat sorted a sound out for me back in the... I was in the live room, then I came back in there, and he sorted something out through the amp. I can't remember what he did, and he put an effect on it. Yeah, but it was really good. I just used to leave that to him, really, being a tech head.
He might not remember what he did either. Sometimes the studio writes its own stuff sometimes, I think.
Yeah, he's... I mean, he's still working like nonstop. He's got bands in every day of the week, and he does everything. You know, he doesn't really do like any hip hop or stuff like that, but I mean, he'll do choirs, because he was trained at Decca as a sound engineer.
Okay.
And then he branched out on his own. He was in a punk band back in the 70s called The Vibrators, who were like part of like the 1976 Sex Pistols. They played the 100 Club and all those gigs. And then he left that and formed, because his first love, Pat, was power pop. And he decided in the middle of all the punk movement to form a power pop band, and he left that. He managed a lot of acts like Susie Quattro and all those RAK acts in the 70s. He signed Pat, but when that didn't work out, then Pat moved into producing, and he's been doing that ever since. And of course, it was like with Katrina and the Waves. He got his first big hit with that Walking on Sunshine.
For the listeners, let's cue up the song This Girl.
This girl, one love, it was written in the stars above.
You know, I saw a special on the Sex Pistols just yesterday.
And, yeah.
Pretty amazing how they got formed. I don't even think any of them really had very much music background, other than they kind of knew what they liked doing. So it was like, okay, we need a guitar player. Why don't you be the guitar player? Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like...
I think I've seen that, yeah. Is that the special where Steve Jones actually starts playing some of the intro to Pretty Vacant?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that a few months ago. He's an amazing guitar player, though. I mean, he's so tight, and what he plays when you listen to on that stuff that they did. He picked it up so quickly, didn't he?
That's what I thought too. I thought, no way, man. There was no way you didn't already play, because he was he was really tight when he was playing on the show.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah, he's really good. I don't believe that. Also, that he didn't know anything. You can't go from, like, knowing, you know, just being a basic learner into playing like on stuff like that and playing. I mean, because the Pretty Vacant riff is, you know, it's steady the way he had to do it and everything, right on the button, isn't it? And,
yeah.
It was really good.
Maybe I'm not that talented, so I had to work really hard at learning how to play. I don't know.
yeah, I did. I really did. I don't know about you, Bruce, but do you find doing lead stuff easier than doing rhythm?
I do.
Yeah, I do.
And there's a really good reason. Now, I always kind of did. And also, I find playing like a pentatonic rock blues scale kind of thing easier than the other scales, too. It just fits my hand better. But I have a tendon disorder right now that I kind of started getting when I was about your age a little bit. It's called Dupuytren's contracture. And what makes your hands kind of close. And but in different degrees. So, you know, like one finger will close. My pinky on my right hand actually touches the palm of my hand, and I can't open it any further than that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, and then the other fingers, like, hyperextend. So, say, an open G chord is kind of hard because my middle finger will hit the A string if I'm putting it on the, you know, third fret of the E.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
God.
So... you just deaden that, you know, you just play certain strings as far as playing chords, I just reinvented what I was doing. I play open strings and just weird stuff.
Yeah.
But that's fine. It gives me kind of my own sound, but leads are easier because I don't know, I can pick and choose what notes I want, I guess. And
so. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an email. We'll do it. We're just about finishing off a new track now. Working out the rhythm guitar for it, getting the right rhythm guitar sound and everything, was more difficult than putting all the little lead bits on top, I found. And I generally find that I'm really glad when the rhythm bits are out of the way.
It sounds like you spend a lot of time getting the sounds right, though.
Yeah, 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 we do, yeah. Yeah, we always have done, we found when we started working with Pat, he wouldn't let anything through. He'd sit there with you, and you know, you'd like rehearse the track, what you were going to play on it, and he'd, because we worked with a producer before that who'd co-produced that To Power song, China in Your Hand, and he drove us insane, to be quite honest. He drove us absolutely mad. He used to listen to a hi-hat or a tambourine for 2 hours and lock himself in the studio. And then he would get B to sing the vocal 10 times, he said, he wanted to do. And then he would pick lines out and he drew a graph. He came in one day with a graph on a board of all the lyrics to the songs with all the different versions, and we had to pick out which one we liked, what the do you prefer? It was madness.
That's a little overboard, I think.
Yeah.
Check the alkalinity and the acidity of this with the litmus paper, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of strange smelling tobacco going on, and quite a few cans in the studio as well. But when we went, we used to go in at midday and then leave at about 5 or 6 in the morning, and then be back there for 12. And then when we said we can't stand any of this, and we got Pat Collier, got the record company to get Pat Collier.
Yeah.
The first day we went in with Pat, the session started at about 11. We were finished at 7 and we were in the pub by 7:30, a couple of drinks, go home, and you come back the following day. And it was brilliant. And it was the first two tracks we did with him were Big Blue World and Gilded Cage. And it was just so easy, the whole thing.
Both great too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever he did was working. That was good.
Oh yeah. He's, I mean, it was weird, but really, cause I asked, I think I told you I asked to work with him cause I was a big fan of his, and then to finally meet him and everything, it was, a bit odd, first of all. It is, isn't it, when you meet somebody that you've admired and everything for quite a long while, and then actually to get to meet him. But he's just such a, he's not a muso. He's not a music biz person at all, Pat. He just isn't. He really is like quintessentially English, just a normal bloke and everything. But he listens for everything. You never get away with a thing with him.
That's, yeah, I don't understand it, but it's definitely an art form, a craft that some people have.
Yeah. I used to, when B's doing the vocals, he always used to make me sit to one side on the sofa in the studio, out of her eye line. And if she, there was something that we were a bit debatable, he used to say to me, just give me a sign and draw your finger across your neck, as though to say that's not good enough. So I was doing that. I only told her that just recently. That's what I used to do. And she wasn't that happy about it, really. No. But at the end of every take, like with the drummer was in there or the bass player or something like that, and we were doing stuff, he used to say at the end of everything, you know, when they played, he used to go, thoughts. And you had to like sit there because he was checking that we were all listening, you know, that we weren't drifting away from it. So, yeah, I think that, and that's what's rubbed off on myself and B.
Her interpretations of your songs, I think, are incredible. Do you ever find that you write something and it just ends up way better than you ever imagined it?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. B's voice has a lot to do with it as well. I mean, and the record company saw that, and, you know, a lot of people saw it. You know, she got a lot of, when we first got signed, a lot of the A&R people saying, oh, she sounded like Stevie Nicks. She sounded like Kirsty MacColl. All those, because it's an unusual voice, and it's not that generic like voice you get now from a lot of girl singers, you know, who don't do anything for me in the slightest. I've, you know, and it's got character to it as well. But what I tend to do is when I've written the song, and then I play it to her, and everything, when it comes to the vocals, I just let her do the vocals to work out her arrangements, because I'm, you know, the only thing I've ever taught was on The Only Girl. Which is on that first album, I taught her the phrasing on that, because I used to sing that in the first band I was ever in. I was the singer in it. And she liked the phrasing, so I did teach her that. But basically, most times, I just let her get on with the vocals to come up with her own arrangements.
A lot of times in pop music, and through the years anyway, everybody sang just at the top of their register all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you guys don't do that. She has a lot of range, but she's got a sweet spot that you're kind of in there a lot. Yeah.
She's got a big hang up about singing in falsetto. You know, she says it's cheating. she won't do that. A lot of cop out and everything. And, you know, when we're ever watching people, she always, you know, if a singer stays within her range and doesn't cheat. She really likes, and yeah, that's what we always try to go for.
We need love.
I suppose, in a way. Yeah, I'm stuck in a time warp, but I think it's a good place to be.
Yeah, well, I thank the God of music for that, because I think you're really bringing some good stuff back, and it's sort of a lost art form.
Yeah.
And it's not the easiest thing to do either, to write songs that are psychologically catchy and and be brave enough to do what they call pop.
I know. Yeah, it's pop rock. I mean, not like everybody, when I first started, I was trying to imitate all different people, but and then it's just a process, isn't it, of like you keep on improving. And then I did, you know, just the normal route. Like I got other people to work with me, and they were all happy to do my song. So I thought, oh, well, there must be something in them, because, you know, there's about four or five blokes who are all like agreeing to play my stuff. And then we started getting interest from record companies. And then, I knew I was doing something right. But I don't know if actually I would have gone on if I hadn't got anywhere, to be quite honest.
Send me the reviews, and I'm not. I don't even know of some of these charts and contests and stuff like that.
No, I don't. But what is really great is that we're one place higher than Madonna, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, that's good.
So, definitely. I'll send you that, and we'll send you the new track that we're working on now. I think we've been working on that today. I just put a little bit more guitar on it, and. When B's done the vocals and it's all mixed by Pat, we'll send that along to you.
Okay, well, you're hitting it out of the park, and that's American baseball lingo there.
Yeah. I know.
I need to learn about cricket. It sort of looks like that.
Oh, don't ask me. I'm football. I'm absolutely football mad. I'm a Chelsea supporter, you know, which is another thing that drives people insane as well. I'm very competitive, even when I watch them.
I bet you're fun to be around, yeah.
Because B actually calls me when I'm watching it an indoor football hooligan. So
great.
Which is quite sad, yeah. But no, that's great. Yeah, I'd love to talk again in the future. And I'll send you those songs, and
please do.
I'll send you what I've worked on Runaway next week.
Okay, well, say hello to B and tell her.
I will do.
Tell her to take good care of you.
All right. Okay then, Bruce.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, Ben.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Oh, cheers. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
listening to the Better Each Day podcast radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.